Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Glynis Board. High school students across the country are graduating. We check in with students who chose a less traditional education, or maybe it's a more traditional education. They decided to learn a craft.
I've been able to come out of my shell. I am with teachers who care about me as an individual. I care about my teachers and my classmates.
These schools offer smaller classes and experience-based learning instead of simply learning from a book.
You just have to find what draws your interest in life. I mean, you can't teach everybody the same, like robots. I mean, everybody has a different technique of learning.
And we'll visit a unique kind of auction where high school students get to sell the meat they've raised, sometimes for hundreds of dollars per pound.
Well, they are now calling me the bacon queen, actually, to be honest.
You'll hear these stories and more this week inside Appalachia. Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Glynis Board. It's graduation season. Certainly, it's a strange time to graduate this year, what with high school and college students unable to celebrate their achievements by walking across a stage in front of a packed auditorium, not to mention the added stress of entering the job market, forced to compete with literally millions of the nation's unemployed. Actually, I'm a graduate myself this spring. I just earned a master's degree in education from West Liberty University. I set out to get a better understanding of how humans learn best. One of my biggest takeaways is grasping the power of experiential learning, and that happens to be the theme today on Inside Appalachia. We're looking at ways students learn life, academic, and practical skills through career and technical education programs. The goal of these programs is often to give students an idea of what kind of career they might want to go into after high school, but we're finding they might offer a lot more than that. We begin in Wetzel County, West Virginia, a rural community where many families have small farms. There's a high school program there that not only has kids raising animals, they're also processing meat and selling it. Students are learning where their food comes from in the most hands-on way possible, an extreme version of farm to table. The students also couple their real-world experience with work in the classroom. And while not everyone who goes through this program will end up getting a job in agriculture, Magnolia High School instructor Scott Ash says students learn valuable lessons that are applicable along any life path.
Well, every person is a consumer, so they're going to go to the grocery store and buy meat. So that's one of the most important things is to know where your food comes from.
And that's especially important for kids who did not grow up on farms.
We have a lot of kids that live in town or that won't ever really live on a farm, or may not be directly related to agriculture. The main thing we focus on is at least getting them around it and just seeing, you know, what it's all about.
Turns out these career, or CTE programs as they're called, are affecting graduation rates. In fact, studies show that students who go to a career high school have higher graduation rates than their peers who choose a traditional path. According to the West Virginia Department of Education, the graduation rates for students involved in CTE programs was 8% higher than the overall graduation rate in 2018. So, making bacon is keeping kids in school. Between March 2019 and March of this year, Corey Nollinger followed several high school students who raised pigs and sold the meat as a way to earn some extra cash. He begins the story at the Wetzel County, West Virginia Ham, Bacon, and Egg Show, held each March, a major tradition in the area that's been going on for 50 years now.
All right, on a little bacon there, 135.
At a 4-H camp in Wetzel County, West Virginia, in the northern panhandle of the state, auctioneers are soliciting bids from a crowd of roughly 100 people. The room looks like a classic bingo hall. There's white walls, harsh fluorescent lighting, but up front, auctioneers decked out in head-to-toe denim sport flashy cowboy hats. They're auctioning off ham, bacon, and eggs.
All right, here we go. Nice ham there. What about 25?
This is the 51st annual Wetzel County Ham, Bacon, and Egg Show. It's an event run by the county's Future Farmers of America program. This isn't your ordinary breakfast fair. The meat and poultry up for auction was raised and butchered by high school students in the county. One of these students is Bailey Fayad.
Well, they are now calling me the bacon queen, actually, to be honest.
This is the second time Bailey, the bacon queen, has received the highest marks on her bacon. A panel of judges assigns each of the hams, dozens of eggs, and slabs of bacon a rank, from choice to grand champion.
Prime is kind of like a way to go, and choice is still pretty good. And then there's your grand and your reserves. So grand champion is first place, and reserve champion is second place. And I actually received grand champion bacon, and I received prime on my ham this year.
The scoring is based on the looks of the product. The judges aren't eating the meat. Some look for fat content, others for appearance or workmanship, some size, but the same hunk of pork could be ranked differently year to year. The auction runs for several hours. More than 100 items are auctioned off one by one. The reserve champion, or second place bacon, sells for $100 per pound, $900 for the whole thing. Then, Bailey's bacon is up. She strides around the room in her blue FFA jacket, weaving between the seats, bacon in hand, showing off the product to possible buyers. Last time she had a grand champion bacon, she got $250 per pound. This year,
$425. You say $500? $500 and a quarter. $500 and a quarter. $5 and a quarter. Somebody get back there and do CPR on him. $525. Sold to you, man. $500. Give her a hand.
$500 per pound for Bailey's bacon. The bacon weighed in at 6.5 pounds, totaling around $3,300 for Bailey. This is a new record for the auction. It takes her a while to process what just happened.
No, I actually did not expect $500 a pound. That was incredible. I feel pretty awesome right now.
As a senior, this is Bailey's last auction. But the experience, raising the pigs and turning them into grand champion bacon, has taught her some valuable lessons.
It's honestly a great thing to get into because it also shows you a lot of responsibility for outside of school and environment and stuff like that. It is definitely a great impact on kids that they need to do.
The money from the auction goes directly to the students, who cover all the costs of raising an animal, from the feed to processing at the slaughterhouse. And those expenses start when the student first picks out a pig, which they pay for out of pocket for around $1 a pound. The making of a grand champion starts in late August. It's a warm, clear day when the 21 students from Magnolia High School participating in the 52nd Ham, Bacon, and Egg Show pick out their pigs. This happens at the same 4-H camp in New Martinsville where the auction is held. A farmer from Ohio has brought a selection here on a large livestock trailer. The students circle around and peer in to see which of the cute, slightly stressed out pigs they want to take a chance on. This is Austin Stillwagner's first time working with a pig, but he already seems to have a strategy.
He's broad through the back, he's long, which gave him a good bacon, he's deep through the stomach, but whenever you pick him, you want to pick him for your bacon, because you can't shape a bacon, you can shake a ham.
Austin is a freshman, and he hopes to follow in Bailey Fayad's footsteps with mentorship from Bailey's dad, now that she's aged out of the program. While this is Austin's first time selecting a pig, this isn't his first time raising livestock. He's actually worked with Jim Fayad before, raising cows for the county fair.
Jim's helped me with my steers and everything else. So I got grand champion steer this year. He's helped me with all of it. He's helped me with the feed, how to raise it, how to break it. He's helped me with it all. And he asked me if I wanted to do a pig, and I told him, yeah.
Austin and the other students select their pigs at around 170 pounds and are expected to raise them until they're around 270 pounds. As the students make their selection, their families or mentors herd the pigs onto smaller trailers and head home. While Austin is strategizing about his first pig, Ham, Bacon, and Egg Show veteran Libby Yater chooses her pig a little more nonchalantly.
Honestly, whichever one you can get first.
Libby is a senior at Magnolia High and has gone through the program 3 times. Last year, she made a big mistake that she won't make again, naming the pig.
But this year, I don't think I am because I got pretty attached to them. They're like little dogs. They followed me around. You scratched their belly, they would roll over.
They
would play in the mud, they would run around, they would carry things in their mouth to you.
That is hard for some students. Usually, it's not that big of an issue. But when it comes up, the instructors try to dissuade students from naming their pigs. Sometimes the instructors suggest naming them after products the pigs will become. A popular choice? Pork chop. Another challenge that students face is not having enough land for the pigs. That's where mentors like Jim Fayed come in. He's letting high schooler Austin Stillwagner board his pig at his farm. Fayed says he wanted to be involved because he didn't get this kind of opportunity when he was young.
I lived in the country, but never got involved in FFA or anything like that, but I enjoyed being involved with animals and everything. I always wanted to test my limits with those animals and you know, be hands-on and everything.
Fayed and his wife ended up buying the small farm where they live today.
I wanted to try to get my daughter and my son involved. I was able to, you know, do that with her and teach her the things that I did know, and we learned together also.
His farm is host to several high schoolers' pigs. It's off a dirt road tucked deep in the heart of Wetzel County, surrounded by tall trees. The place looks like your typical small-scale farm. There's an open pig pen surrounded by a wooden fence with a small shed, which provides shade on hot days. The farm sits on a slight hill, which Austin explains could help him produce a grand champion.
You'd imagine pig farm flat and all that, which yes, you want it flat, that way it's easier for you, but if you have it on a hill, you can build their hams, make them bigger, get less fat off of them, give you a better ham for show.
The slope helps build up a better ham on the pig, in the same way a Stairmaster builds up the legs on a person. Overall, a month into raising his pig, Austin says it's much easier than he expected.
Me doing cows, I'm out there every day, so I thought this would be the same thing. I'm out here every day with them, checking their feed, checking their water, everything. But Jim showed me that with a gravity feeder and a self-water, I don't have to be out here every day. It's still good to come.
A gravity feeder automatically refills the trough with food, which allows Austin to be a little more hands-off. Over the next few weeks, he will continue coming out to the farm to check on the feed, water, and make sure the pigs haven't dug themselves a tunnel out of their pen, which has been known to happen.
We've been listening to a story by Corey Nollinger about farm education in Wetzel County, West Virginia, where high school students raise livestock and process the meat. They actually learn to cure the bacon inside a classroom. We'll hear more about that in just a minute. Now, for some listeners, especially if you didn't grow up in a rural community, learning about a program like this might seem a little strange. But for many kids, learning the skills to raise animals is a super normal part of growing up. And students get to experience the challenges of raising their own food, which includes quite a bit of long-term planning, regular commitment, and problem solving. And they learn it all through hard work, countless hours of it. When we pick the story back up, it's late fall, and it's time for the pigs the students have raised to be slaughtered. Again, Corey Nollinger reports.
By early October, all the pigs make their target weight, between 270 and 300 pounds, with no breakouts reported. The students bring their noticeably larger pigs back to the 4-H camp. The families come one by one, dropping off their now portly pigs. The animals are loaded up onto another trailer like kids going on a field trip. The pigs are noticeably more stressed out. It's hot in the large metal trailer, and they might have a sense of what happens at their next destination, the slaughterhouse. For Libby Yater, this is bittersweet.
Well, I'm not really sad that I don't have to take care of a pig anymore, which is nice, because the pig poop kind of smells pretty bad, but they were nice pigs this year.
She did not end up naming her pig this year. She tried, but none of the names stuck. It's the halfway point for the FFAers. Pig raising is finished. Meat processing starts on Monday. The meat is all processed inside a new meat lab at Magnolia High School. The 3-year-old lab is reminiscent of a chemistry lab, but with bandsaws instead of Bunsen burners.
When we did it, we didn't have the meat labs. We did ours at home.
usually we had to, they were like back how they used to do them in the old days. Like they were out in an outbuilding. You had to do a lot of the process at home.
That's Amanda Yater, Libby's mother and ham, bacon, and egg show mentor. She competed in ham, bacon, and egg shows when she was a student in the early 90s. During deer season, meat processing students can earn the school extra money by turning deer carcasses into specific cuts of venison. The lab is also where the students preparing for the ham, bacon, and egg show work on their product.
I think they have it made a heck of a lot easier than we did because they have it all right there.
The lab looks like a commercial butcher shop. It's immaculately clean. There's three walk-in coolers, a bandsaw, a meat grinder, and stainless steel tables for breaking down meat. After her pig is slaughtered, Libby Yater gets it back cut in half with its head removed. She wears an apron and moves around the meat lab like a pro. She weighs her ham, calculates the right amount of cure to use, and scrapes bone fragments off of her pork chops. Even after doing this for 4 years, Libby says she's still surprised to see what it ends up looking like.
When you look at it, you can't really tell like what kind of, like you can tell what kind of meat is under it, but you're never sure like how much fat is going to be on it. You don't know if like the meat is going to be okay or if they're going to cut off some.
Now she has to turn the side of pork into recognizable cuts.
Split off the ham, cut off the bacon, and then most of the time you just have the front shoulder, and then you have the pork chops. You have to cut off the ribs to get down to the bacon for like, and then you, after that, we put the ham in the curing cooler with a mixture of salt and like brown sugar. And then we wrap the bacon in saran wrap and we stick it in the freezer until like a later process.
John Smith works with Scott Ash as an instructor in the meat lab. He shows the students how to form their cuts.
I typically do one and the kids do the other one. So they're guaranteed to have one good one. Sometimes they like to butcher them, but it's part of the learning process.
While the hams and bacons are the focus of the project, the student owns the rest of the meat that comes from the pig, like the pork chops and the ribs. Libby keeps hers to enjoy later. Others sell them to private buyers. Austin Stillwagner feels pretty good about what he's gotten back from the slaughterhouse.
The hams were very, very well built. The bacons were very well shaped, and they're thick and long. So I have a lot to choose whenever I go to cut and choose where I want my line to be.
That's the line of lean meat that runs throughout the bacon. The less the line is broken by fat, the higher the bacon tends to score with judges at the auction. For the next few months, Austin and Libby's hams will cure in the cooler. Eventually, they'll be hung after a certain amount of time. How much time is part of the school's tightly guarded process. It's one of the few things that changes from school to school. The students enter their hams and bacons into both the county and state shows, but generally, they want to keep the higher quality one for the local sale. That's where they'll probably make more money. Austin says he's aiming high.
I'm kind of just hoping for the best on this one, seeing it's my first one. But, I mean, that's what everybody does. Everybody shoots for the highest.
Remember, the Bacon Queen Bailey Fayad's Grand Champion product sold for around $3,300 at the last Ham, Bacon, and Egg show. It's expensive because people aren't just paying for an ideal ratio of fat to lean. They're supporting the future of their community students. The bids are friendly competition, sometimes even between two members of the same family. Wetzel County Assessor Scott Lemley bought that $3,300 slab of bacon at the most recent show.
Well, as a student at Hundred High School, I was involved with the Vocational Agriculture and FFA program, and I raised hogs both for the state fair and the ham, bacon, and egg show. So I knew what kind of work went into it as far as a student and how much money you invest in it, time you invest in it.
Lemley competed his first 2 years of high school. He even got a grand champion bacon his first year. He remembers who bought it at auction roughly two decades ago. Since the students get to keep the money from the sale of their pigs, they can choose to use it towards whatever they want. Usually, they reinvest it into the next year's pig. But when Lemley was a student, he did something a little different with his money.
Well, the money that I've honestly made, I still have invested in the bank and a CD. So in a way, it taught me money management skills. many of the students that have come up to me throughout the year said, you know, but you've helped pay for my first semester of college, or I'm going to be able to do this to advance my education, whether it be college or a technical program.
Another major buyer is the Wileyville Volunteer Fire Department. It hosts a ham and chicken dinner every year using hams from the sale. The fire department buys one ham, but most of the meat they cook up is donated by other winning bidders. For $10, diners can try the hams for themselves, an absolute steal compared to auction prices.
Third place ham. All right, here we go. You know you're buying them by the pound. All right, here we go. What do you want to get for? Somebody get $25 bill. Get $25. Get $24 bill. Somebody get $20.
Fast forward to March 2020. A year has passed since we first heard the sound of the students' ham and bacon being auctioned off at a 4-H camp in Wetzel County. Now it's time for Austin and Libby to see how well their meat sells. Both students have pretty good showings in their hams. While neither walk away with a grand champion, Austin is pretty pleased that he scored a prime on his bacon and makes it to the top 10 with his ham.
I mean, I wasn't really expecting it to be that high, to be honest with you. I figured it was a little bit lower, but it done way better than what I thought it was going to.
His ham and bacon is auctioned for a combined total of $732.50, which he plans on putting directly into next year's pig. Libby also gets prime on both her ham and bacon, and she takes home 7th place in the county for her ham. After finishing up what will be her last auction, Libby says she feels like she left on a high note.
I think it's nice. Like, I like that I got in the top 10, and it's like, if it is my last year, it'll be a nice one to remember.
Her products help raise her a total of $615, and she receives a $500 scholarship for her achievements in the Ham, Bacon, and Egg Show over her 4 years of high school. As for the Bacon Queen's record, well, it was broken, but not by much.
We'll go 5 1/4. It's only money. 5 1/4. At 525 where? At 500, now 25. At 500 here, now 25, 5-5 on a grand champion, 5 1/4, 1/4. Break him up at 525 on a good 4-5 here. Now 5 1/4, now half. At 525, now half. At 525, it'd be now 50-50, what a 50, what a 50, what a 50, what a 50, ask him 5 1/2, and we're gonna 50. At 525, it'd be now 50. You bought it, $525, 77, 77 a buyer, 525, broke the record.
Scott Lemley once again brings home the grand champion bacon for a new record of $525 a pound. The largest total of the night goes to the grand champion ham, which sells for almost $10,000, a new record. For some, this is like an after-school job. It's a way to make some money. For others, like Austin, they take a lot of pride knowing they can raise a pig or a steer that will feed others.
I've grown up with my uncle, my dad, and my grandpa. That's all we've ever done. We bale hay, grow crops, raise beef. That's all we've ever done. I just love the feeling I can give back to others, and I can still make money while I'm doing it.
Farming is a family tradition for Austin, but he's just learning how to do it on his own.
I just love the feeling of having animals. I love animals. I love the feeling I can butcher something, feed others, and just give back, that what animal I raise can give back and feed another family.
But before he follows in his family's footsteps, he has 3 more years of ham, bacon, and egg shows to look forward to. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Corey Nollinger in New Martinsville, West Virginia.
Corey originally produced a version of that story for the Gravy Podcast from the Southern Foodways Alliance. Fun fact, Corey got his storytelling start in a career and technical education class when he was in high school here in West Virginia. Up next, other students share their experiences going to career and technical schools.
I've had friends who wanted to drop out, but then when they started their vocational class, they loved it so much that they wanted to stay in school just because it was something they looked forward to every day.
And yet, some students say they face stigma for pursuing a vocational track. And we travel to Nashville, Tennessee. where a school system managed to improve their high school graduation rates by turning all of their schools into vocational academies. And that's up after a quick break. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Glynis Board. We'll be right back.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
Today on Inside Appalachia, we're hearing from students who made the choice to pursue a career or a vocational track in high school. This type of education is nothing new. Some of the first public schools in the country offered career training. Over the years, of course, federal guidelines for these programs have evolved, and schools and students have changed too. But the heart of vocational schools remains much the same. Hands-on learning takes up a significant portion of the school day. Sure, there are still chalkboards and smart boards, books and research papers. Reflection is a key aspect of experiential learning. But the practical application of math, science, and English is at the core of what guides career-focused learning. These schools also connect students with businesses. In fact, companies are often more than willing to help train students. Here in Appalachia and across other rural areas of our country, some students learn meat processing and how to raise pigs, as we heard in that last story. But most vocational schools also teach engineering, healthcare, or how to be an auto mechanic, all fields that require technological expertise. But stigma still seems to follow these students around some. It's true that some students who may have otherwise dropped out do say that getting hands-on education helped make them want to stay in school. But that stereotype about career schools only being for kids who can't get into college, it might be changing. In our next story, we travel to Nashville, Tennessee, where a school system was facing some of the nation's worst high school dropout rates. So they did something pretty radical. They turned their schools into career academies. Back in 2014, APM Reports produced a documentary about career schools across the country. Reporter Laurie Stern went to Nashville to find out how the community there has responded to this shift.
This is what lunch period sounds like at Glencliff High School, one of the most diverse public high schools in the country. Students at this table were born in Egypt. Arabic is one of more than two dozen languages spoken here. The student body is about 40% Latino and 30% African American. Almost all the students are from poor or working-class families. It's a lot like big public schools in many cities, but it has classes that make it feel not so big.
Which piece are you going to build next?
Advanced design class, groups of three or four students cluster around laptops at a couple of long tables. They're designing little free libraries, basically boxes on poles that will sit in front yards where neighbors can exchange books. The class is part of the Engineering Academy, one of three career academies within the school. Damari Mumphrey is a junior in the Engineering Academy and loves it.
I can go on a computer and do research on buildings and their architecture, and that'll just keep me in for hours.
Damari says she didn't used to care about school, but now she's fired up. She wants to be an architect.
I can sit in the shop and cut some wood, and that'll get me. So the academy it's really pulled me in. It's really pulled me in. I've developed a love for it. It's like I discovered myself.
Did you come up with the colors? Are you going to put the colors into the model?
In this class, students work together on every aspect of building the library boxes, from design to installation. The idea is that each small group is learning more than engineering. They're also learning how to collaborate and communicate, solving interpersonal problems as well as technical ones.
Oh, there we go. You can do that.
Is that the platform for your roof?
No, that's the pole.
And they're making connections to the world outside school. day, a visiting architect from a big firm in Nashville is helping students with their designs.
Your skin, where you're going to put your slats. Yes. What is that? That piece is the...
That's the roof.
Okay, that's supporting your roof.
The architecture firm is one of Glencliff's business partners. Other business partners include a chain of dialysis clinics, Dell Computers, Shoney's Restaurants, a children's hospital, and several hotels. Architect Tara Myers says her company wants to encourage Glencliff students to choose careers in architecture, construction, and engineering. She says across the country, not enough students are choosing to study those fields in college.
We're not getting as many graduates coming out of those programs as we maybe did 20 years ago. And also trying to increase the diversity going into those fields as well. More women, more minorities, and really just trying to open that up to a more diverse population.
The businesses that work with the Nashville Academies get a chance to attract and train workers. And the students get field trips, internships, and professionals who help with class projects. They also get a more hands-on way of learning that focuses on projects and career themes. Even the regular academic classes try to incorporate those themes. Elizabeth Brewer teaches history in Glencliff's Medical Academy.
So we might, during our study of world wars, talk about how medicine has evolved and battlefield medicine. So there's elements of pulling in medical science issues into history, and it takes a lot of extra effort because that's not in the textbook.
This is a far cry from how things are typically done in traditional high schools.
High schools are organized in blocks of time, each of which is labeled with a particular subject.
David Stern is director of the College and Career Academy Support Network, a research institute at UC Berkeley.
Period one is English or something, and period two is science, and period three might be math. Different teachers, different groups of students, absolutely no connection from one period to the next. That is just a ridiculous way to organize learning. A lot of kids just can't connect. So creating some kind of theme or focus or coherence to the curriculum is very helpful in providing direction and motivation for students.
Nashville began experimenting with more career education in 2005. By 2010, it had transformed most of its high schools into career academies. The majority of students now attend career academies, and the change has been dramatic. Graduation rates are up, and there are far fewer discipline problems. The suspension rate is down by 30%. Now, people from all over the country are coming to see how it's done here. Nashville's career academies have hosted hundreds of visitors. People on this tour came from across the country, from the White House, and even from England. The Glencliff students who greeted them wore dark blue jackets, white shirts, and thin red ties. They are school ambassadors, hand-picked for being leaders and good public speakers.
Now we'll be going to the Ford Academy of Business and Innovation.
One of the ambassadors is Tonya Romero. Tonya is a junior in Glencliff's Academy of Medical Science and Research. She says she wants to be an ER nurse, or maybe a special ed teacher, or she might join the military.
See, I can see myself in law enforcement too, because I mean, I have that kind of like strong, tough personality, but at the same time, I'm like such a nice person.
At 16, Tonya's not quite sure what she wants to do, but that's okay. Experts say career academies are not designed to train students in specific careers. The idea is to help them see options, and they say that helps keep students engaged in school. The career academy idea has picked up steam in large part because of research led by this guy.
My name is Jim Kempel. I serve as the executive director of the Research Alliance for New York City Schools based at New York University.
Back in the early 90s, Kempel and his team were looking for solutions to the high school dropout problem.
We were looking around the country for promising interventions that were aimed at not just getting students to finish high school with the appropriate academic credentials, but promising approaches to helping young people make healthy transitions into the labor market.
Kempel and his colleagues set up a study focused on urban schools made up mostly of low-income African-American and Hispanic students. Students were randomly selected to be in career academies. The study followed the students for 8 years after high school and compared them with students who had not been chosen for the career academies. The researchers found that students who went to career academies earned more money later, and they were more likely to have jobs with benefits. That research has led to an explosion in the number of career academies in the U.S. There are now more than 6,000 schools that say they have career academies. But Kempel says that not all of them are set up the way they should be. He says career academies need three things to be effective.
So it's the smaller learning communities, the curriculum that combines academic and career-related coursework, and partnerships with local employers that provide work-based learning opportunities for students.
Nashville is doing all three of those things, and it does seem to be helping more students finish school. But not everyone's happy with the way things are going. Some students say they are forced to choose subjects they aren't interested in. For example, at Glencliff, the only options are business, medicine, and engineering. Across town, there's a school that offers alternative energy, education, and law. In theory, students are allowed to go to any academy they choose, but the district doesn't provide busing, so in reality, most kids are forced to pick an academy at their local high school. And some students and parents are skeptical of the whole career academy idea.
Some parents saw the word career as you're preparing my kid for a job.
This is Jay Steele again, chief academic officer for the school district.
Well, no, we're not preparing your kid for a job. We're preparing your kids to have those skills, critically thinking and communication, collaboration, creativity. We say college and career ready, and we put a conscious effort to put college first because we want every kid to go on to post-secondary something. I do believe no matter if you're Harvard-bound or you're going to a technical school or military, the experience you get in an academy will prepare you for all of those if it's designed correctly.
But a lot of families in Nashville are not convinced. They still want their kids to go to a high school with a more traditional academic program. One more like Martin Luther King Jr. High, on the other side of town from Glencliff.
Wow, good afternoon, everyone. Yeah, I am thrilled to be here, and go Royals. You all are awesome.
Michelle Obama gave the commencement speech there in 2013. Martin Luther King Jr. is one of two academic magnet schools in Nashville. U.S. News ranks it as one of the top 100 high schools in the country. Nearly all of the students who attend the academic magnets go on to four-year colleges.
And this fall, you will be heading to schools all across this country, UT, Vanderbilt, Columbia, Duke, Colorado.
When the city turned most of its high schools into career academies, it spared the academic magnets.
If any of us were to say we wanted to close a magnet school, we would be run out of town.
Chief Academic Officer Jay Steele says there is huge demand for the academic magnet schools, with long waiting lists of students hoping to get in.
But I don't want parents to think that if you don't get into the magnet, you've lost the lottery and you have no other choice but private school, because our zone schools are just as good as the magnet schools.
Zone schools being the neighborhood high schools, the ones with career academies. Jesse Register, superintendent of the district, says in spite of the demand, Nashville has no plans to open more academic magnets.
The programs are very traditional. Now, they're very strong, but the instructional approach doesn't fit the needs of every student in our district. The academy model really is designed to serve the highest percentage of our population.
Most public school students in Nashville come from poor or working class families. But the vast majority of students in Nashville's acclaimed magnet schools are from middle and upper income families. In other words, there's a huge class divide between who attends the magnet schools and who attends the career academies. This is a problem, says David Stern, the expert on career academies.
I think that the schools should try to level the playing field rather than further tilt it. If schools are organized in a way that is providing greater advantage to the already advantaged, I think that's a bad thing.
School officials in Nashville say students at the career academies are getting good academic preparation, but there is no data to prove it yet. Scores on state standardized tests at the career academies have actually gone down in recent years, though that's partly because kids who might have dropped out before are staying in school and actually taking the tests. And it's not clear whether more kids are going on to post-secondary education. But it is clear that more students are graduating from high school now. And all the research shows that students who make it through high school are much better off than students who never graduate at all, especially if they have marketable skills and can get good jobs.
doing okay?
At a Nashville dialysis clinic, Anna Martin Castaneda is taking care of 9 patients who sit in recliners hooked up to dialysis machines. The clinic is run by Dialysis Clinic Incorporated, one of the businesses that works with Glencliff High School.
How many more minutes do I have?
You have
50
more minutes.
50 more minutes. Thank you.
Anna Martin started working here when she was a junior at Glencliff.
When I started the internship, I didn't know anything about dialysis. I didn't even know it existed. So I felt like it opened up a path where I have a job now, and I'm good at it.
Anna Martin is 22. She became a certified care technician while she was still in high school, thanks to Glencliff's Medical Academy. As a high school graduate with a credential, Anna Martin is already doing better than her parents. They came from Mexico and never finished high school. Anna Martin is proud to say they're citizens now. Her dad works for a lawn service, and her mom fills orders at an auto parts store. And now, with help from her employer, Anna Martin is going to community college. Dialysis Clinic Incorporated pays most of her tuition and will continue to support her as she pursues a nursing degree.
I'm thinking pediatrics, but I know once I start my clinicals, I'll know for sure, or I might stay here.
This is exactly the kind of results supporters of career academies have in mind. High school graduates who are ready for college and also able to get good jobs that can help them pay for college.
Laurie Stern of APM Reports originally reported that story back in 2014 as part of an hour-long documentary. And since that story originally aired, graduation rates continue to increase in Nashville. Last year, more than 82% of students there graduated from high school. Certainly an increase since 2005, when the graduation rate was hovering around 60% before the school system implemented its academy program. Meanwhile, here in West Virginia, the State Department of Education reports that 96% of students who attend career and technical schools graduate high school within 4 years. Last year, students had the highest graduation rates on record. Across West Virginia, about 44,000 students are enrolled in career and technical or CTE courses. That's about 30% of the overall high school population. According to the Department of Education, 88% of all CTE students in West Virginia go on to get jobs, join the military, or attend post-secondary education within a year of graduating high school. It's not exactly clear how that number compares with students who choose a traditional path. The Department of Education told West Virginia Public Broadcasting in an email they don't track those statistics. Actually, Corey Nollinger, who produced the story at the beginning of our show about the ham, bacon, and egg auction, is a good example. He graduated from high school having gone through a media CTE program and then went on to a 4-year college where he continued to hone those skills. Before he graduated, he was interning with West Virginia Public Broadcasting, where he's now employed. Here's a taste of Corey's CTE days.
This is a walk which raises money to help cure multiple sclerosis, which is being held on Saturday, April 25th at Heritage Port in Wheeling.
Yes, that's Corey Nollinger as a high school senior reporting for WJMH Reports. Fast forward to 2020, not only is he working for us, Corey also stepped up to help a current CTE high school student produce a story for today's show. TJ Ellison goes to the Fayette Institute of Technology in Southern West Virginia. Inside Appalachia has been mentoring his class, teaching radio storytelling. For his very first story, TJ decided to focus on his own experience at CTE school. He set out to learn more about how students and teachers in his community feel about a career and trade school path.
I decided to go to a high school with vocational programs myself because when I was 9, I decided I wanted to be a chef. I thought there was a home economics class in middle school to help me start my path to culinary greatness, but there wasn't. When I got to high school, a culinary arts class was offered at our CTE school. The CTE school here is a completely separate building from our high school. When it came time to enroll, I didn't think twice, as I'm not very well suited for a traditional classroom setting. But as graduation came closer and I began applying for colleges, I was wondering, have I made the right decision? I began asking my classmates and school staff if they think going to a career school and technical high school helps students who are looking at a college. One of my fellow students at my school is Kristen Williams. Before this story, I never actually sat down to talk with her about this topic. Like me, she loved the benefits of learning through practical experience.
We learn off of a board or in a book,
for a lot of us, that's not how we learn. We just throw it off. We just try to get by and pass. But here we're learning something hands-on, and we're able to actually keep that information.
Another reason Kristen likes CTE schools is because it helps break down the stereotype that college is the only path forward for those students that are about to graduate.
Most definitely. This school gives kids a reason to come to school every day.
Kristen is hoping to get a job as an auto mechanic after she graduates high school. She says she learns better at a CTE school compared to her traditional high school, where she sat at a desk all day and struggled to stay focused. She says all around, CTE classes has given her a reason to care about school in ways she hadn't in the past.
I've been able to come out of my shell. I am with teachers who care about me as an individual. I care about my teachers and my classmates.
Learning by doing is a huge draw to career and technical education, or CTE classes, which is the official name for vocational technology classes. In West Virginia, these courses are offered in high school as a supplement to the traditional classroom environment with classes that teach hands-on career skill. For Kirsten, that means auto mechanic classes, but it can also be skills like business or forestry classes. But those aren't the only options. Many CTE programs across the state offer classes for media production, cooking, and even classes that help prepare students for the medical field. With that being said, there is still a stereotype that CTE classes are all shop classes, with some schools even having derogatory terms for those who spend the majority of their time in the CTE facilities. The reason for this, as FIT principal Mr. Keaton points out, is because the perception of CTE classes hasn't been adapted to what is now available to the students.
I think that the current generation of parents, which is my generation of people, grew up in a time when trade schools were where a lot of guys went to work on their cars, learn how to build houses, and that kind of thing. That was my experience when I was in high school. That's what the Vo-Tech was for.
Welding technology instructor Roy Neal Jr. explains that the skills learned in CTE classes can directly lead to employment upon graduation.
They definitely help students get jobs out in the industry. I have a lot of employers call here looking for students because they know the quality of students that I send out of here. So they want somebody that has the basic understanding of a trade.
Mr. Neal says people don't often talk about the benefits of a vocational high school.
Yeah, I think it should be promoted more in the high schools through the guidance counselors, you know, because I know they push college, you know, students hard. And while they're still in high school, students ought to be informed of the opportunities that they have in a vocational school as long as they have all their academic credits caught up.
He also believes CTE classes not only teach students important workforce-related skills, but also helps reinforce what is learned in the traditional classroom.
I've had students who run through this program that probably would have dropped out of school. This was their opportunity, you know. And not everybody's academic, you know. You just have to find what draws your interest in life. I mean, you can't teach everybody the same, like robots. I mean, everybody has a different technique of learning, different techniques of doing things, have their own concept of what they want to do with their life, whether it's through music or through art or through hands-on work or being a doctor or whatever. You have to find your love in life. And once you find that, you know, that will help you get more involved in other things, such as academics.
Even looking past job training, CTE programs give some students a reason to go to school in the first place. As business instructor Ms. Woodson explains, the classes give students who might not be interested in their more traditionally taught classes a better way to learn.
We had a lot of students that when I had them as 9th and 10th graders, you know, I would really just tell them, I know that you're struggling here. I know a traditional classroom setting isn't working for you. So, but if you hang in there and we can get you to fit, you know, I think you'll find something that will really, that you'll enjoy.
This is something that multimedia and publishing student Stormy Surface has seen firsthand among her peers.
I've had friends who wanted to drop out, but then when they started their vocational class, they loved it so much that they wanted to stay in school just because it was something they looked forward to every day.
But not everyone is fit for a CTE program. Markayla King was considering going into the pharmacy classes offered at FIT, but had a change of heart.
I did consider going to Votech, but I chose against it because of what I've known about it. Like, I didn't want to be chained down to one certain career. I want to kind of expand my careers to see what I want to go into.
Markayla is considering going into pathology as she graduates, so the idea of not being able to take more STEM classes at her school made her feel a little uneasy about going to FIT. In the end, Markayla did change her career choice. Instead of pharmacy, she wants to study biochemistry and pathology. She plans to attend West Virginia University in the fall. I get what she means. A CT school probably wouldn't have given her the chance to focus as much of her time on AP chemistry and other sciences. But I disagree that she would have had to only choose one career path if she'd chosen a CTE track. Actually, I changed career plans myself. Though I was initially wanting to go into culinary arts and become a chef, I got to take the multimedia arts class at my school. Now I'm hoping to pursue media as my career field. Trade schools are often looked down on and get a bad rap because of what they're designed to do. Some people see them as an option for kids who would otherwise drop out. But around my community, it's not as stigmatized as much as it is in other places. For me personally, my dad went to a trade school for his high school, and that's how it is for many of my friends and their neighbors. One thing I realized while interviewing people for the story is that everybody doesn't learn the same way. Some people do learn through books, but others really like hands-on training, and that's some I can personally identify with. Though all my time at school, I was never really the kid with straight A's, but whenever it came to the hands-on projects, I excelled. And while CTE schools aren't often for everybody, for a lot of students, including me, they work. And over time, I do hope that hands-on learning becomes more accepted. For Inside Appalachia, I'm TJ Ellison in Fayette County, West Virginia.
TJ graduated from the Fayette Institute of Technology a few days after he filed that story. Congratulations, TJ. As he mentioned, he's hoping to study media in college this fall. Senior Ashton Huffman also helped report this story along with West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Corey Nollinger. Maybe it's just me, but I love the sound of people finding their voice. And can I just say, I love TJ's story. I love the personality and cheer coming through his narration and learning a little about life in his corner of Appalachia. I love how he included perspectives different from his own and took a second to reflect on that. He spoke with teachers and classmates and explored stereotypes. I think it demonstrates critical thinking, creativity, cooperation, and we heard his go with new audio technical skills. So he really exemplifies this concept of experiential learning pretty perfectly. A great way to finish off our show this week. Thanks again, TJ, for the work. Until next time, thanks for joining me as we journey throughout Appalachia. We had help producing Inside Appalachia this week from APM Reports. We had scripting assistance this week from Jesse Wright at 100 Days in Appalachia, which is published at the West Virginia University Reed College of Media Innovation Center. Our theme music is by Matt Jackford. Other music this week is provided by Dinosaur Burps, Spencer Elliott, Blue Dot Sessions, and John R. Miller. Roxy Todd is our producer. Eric Douglas is our associate producer. Our audio mixer is Patrick Stevens. Xander Alloy also helped produce this episode. You can find us on Twitter at InAppalachia. You can also send us an email to insideappalachia@wvpublic.org. Visit wvpublic.org/InsideAppalachia to sign up for the Inside Appalachia newsletter. There you can also subscribe or download all of our stories, or look for the Inside Appalachia podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Inside Appalachia is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.